I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Decades ago, AM radio was king of the airwaves until FM, with its better sound quality, began to steal its listeners. AM executives, desperate to stay relevant and profitable, took a chance on something called talk radio and a DJ named Rush Limbaugh, who had a talent for engaging his audience through his on-air antics and gift for spinning stories. Our guest, Brian Rosenwald, tracks the rise and influence of AM talk in his new book, Talk Radio's America. It's about how Rush Limbaugh and other like-minded conservative hosts got political, speaking to and for Americans who felt disenfranchised, left behind, looked down upon by the so-called elite. Tapping into this frustration, Rosenwald writes, talk radio connected with the GOP and paved the way for the eventual election of Donald Trump. Brian Rosenwald is co-editor-in-chief of Made by History, which is a section of the Washington Post. He's also a scholar in residence at the University of Pennsylvania and joins us here in our Philadelphia studios to talk about talk radio and his new book. Brian, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, it's a pleasure to be with you.
I should say to our listeners, we were getting all nostalgic talking about local talk radio, and there was back in the 1970s here in Philadelphia. I used to listen to a radio station, WWDB. It was completely that talk radio format, but it was liberal, it was conservative, it was moderate, it was down the middle. What happened to stations like that?
Well, WWDB was guided by one principle, which was that good talk radio had to be local. It had to be, you know, they had to be able to talk about City Hall. They had to know what a John is for, you know, those of you listening outside
of
Philadelphia.
It's a little more current thing. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, they had to have that local currency. And that was the norm. Through the mid-80s, the sense among radio executives was you have to be able to be local to succeed in talk radio. And there was successful talk radio in big cities, Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles. But there wasn't a lot of talk radio beyond that. And Rush Limbaugh changes the code. He comes along, and actually the paradigm at that time on talk radio was probably a guy by the name of Michael Jackson out in L.A.
Not the musical Michael Jackson.
No. Not the musical Michael Jackson. I don't think this guy could moonwalk, but he was a South African gentleman who shows Bill around interviews. He interviewed everyone from mobsters to presidents. I think he interviewed like three presidents. And he was number one in the market, and he could ask hard questions. You know, he asked one of the mobsters, you know, where were the bodies buried, you know, things like that. But it was, if anything, he was left of center, and his perspective rarely shined through. And he was the paradigm. There was another guy in New York by the name of Barry Farber, who was a star, and he is as colorful a man as you will ever meet. But he said, you know, Limbaugh, he was a conservative, but he said, you know, Limbaugh came along, and I said to myself, why didn't I think of that? Because he said it would never have occurred to him to criticize the president of the United States.
Well, one of the things you say, and this is what was happening in the 1980s, is that we got rid of the fairness doctrine, and that seemed to open the door, if not floodgates, on this more conservative kind of radio.
Yeah, there's a debate in the radio industry about just how central the demise of the fairness doctrine was. And one thing that people get wrong about it is you could have conservative shows before then. Rush Limbaugh did his show in Sacramento for 3 years under the fairness doctrine. But you couldn't have the all conservative station that you have today. You would have had, there was a liberal on that station in Sacramento with Limbaugh. You had to have overall balance in discussing the issues on a station. And it was not as doctrinaire. And the other thing, obviously, that Limbaugh changes is this notion of syndication, where today we've had consolidation in the industry. And a lot of your conservative radio stations are a local host in the morning. And from about 9 o'clock onward in the morning, they have – it's all syndicated, all nationally syndicated. There might not even be anybody in the studio because it's Glenn Beck, it's Limbaugh, it's Sean Hannity, all of whom are syndicated by the parent company. And that's what you have all day in every market.
Well, it's interesting that when the fairness doctrine, and you can say it had a big influence or not so big an influence on what happened to talk radio, it could have gone left, but it went right. And why do you think that is?
In one word, it's Limbaugh. He comes along. He is one of the two supreme spoken word talents of that generation. And the second one, of course, is Howard Stern, who is less political and harder to pigeonhole ideologically. And Limbaugh comes along and he's doing this brash, entertaining, funny show that people have never heard anything like this in most markets. You know, there were a few, but very few who'd heard anything like that. And he comes along and he reshapes the entire, not only the norms of the business, but he reshapes what the audience wants. And you can almost see the light bulb go off of the executives' heads.
But what's interesting, you write in the beginning, talking about Rush Limbaugh, is he was not particularly political or even conservative. It was more about, I'm an entertainer. I want to keep my audience. I want to keep them plugged in and obviously be able to sell them to my advertisers.
Yeah, he says, you know, he is obviously he's conservative from day one because those are the values he got at the dinner table from his father. But he tells an interviewer very early on his national syndicated time, he says there are three reasons that people listen to the radio. Entertainment, entertainment, entertainment. And he is trying to put on the best show every day. He says, you know, very openly, my goal is to charge confiscatory advertising rates, not to elect presidents, not to elect congressmen, but to make as much money as I possibly can. And I think it surprises him when people start calling in saying, thank God you're on the air, Rush, or what has now become dittos or mega dittos, because nobody likes to hear people gushing about the host when you know, call in. And this is sort of a surprise to him.
Why? I mean, and I ask that because he exudes this supreme confidence on the air, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's because I think he had a supreme confidence about his skills as an entertainer. He has been a DJ who's fired 4 or 5 times in the 70s, and he's fired mostly because he doesn't like to listen to his bosses, which is not a great trait, you know, when you're trying to make a living. But he was the kind of guy who's spinning Elton John records and between records, he's calling the local pizza parlor and saying he's from the station down the street and he wants 500 pies or something, you know, hijinks. He's having fun. And a lot of that act carries over to a long form, you know, talk show. And he does an interview for an affiliate in like 1990 and he tells the guy interviewing him, you know, I always thought this could work in talk. But I think that he thinks that he's going to succeed because he's that good on the radio, because he's that good of an entertainer, not necessarily because people are so enthralled with his politics and feel so marginalized and voiceless. Remember, this is the moment when Ronald Reagan, you know, he goes on, Ronald Reagan's still in the White House for another 6 months.
Well, and it's interesting to compare him to Howard Stern, sort of parallel tracks on the radio. Howard, of course, not as political, but still playing with some of those same silly radio antics that work so well.
Yeah, you have radio antics. And I think the one real commonality is they both push norms. They both push boundaries. They both say things that people are like, oh my God, did he just say that? You know, and Howard Stern, of course, does it in ways that the FCC doesn't particularly like.
No, but he's on satellite radio, right, so he's right. Unshackled.
Yeah, he goes to satellite radio to get unshackled in part because his, you know, the people syndicating him say we're tired of paying fines, you know. But he is doing something the same way where it's the people who feel like the norms of quote-unquote political correctness. And that term is problematic, but, you know, the idea that people felt like the norms changed on them, that they were pretty satisfied, you know, especially white men, with where society was even in the late 60s, and the rights movements come along and they say, we're not satisfied. There's a lot of us who are not happy with this culture and who say, you can't say that anymore or you can't do that anymore. And these people feel like they're walking on eggshells. They feel like they're worried, you know, if I say this, my wife or my boss or my child is going to say to me, you're a bigot. And talk radio gives them a voice. And Stern does that in one way, and Limbaugh does that in a more political way.
Let me play a clip. This is Rush Limbaugh. He's appearing on Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network, and this is back in 1990.
But I think one of the real reasons for the success of the show is the perception, and as you know, in politics, perception is oftentimes reality, the perception by real people that the primary disseminators of information in this country are shall we say, slanted to the left. Yeah. And here comes the first, and it's really the only national program on radio or TV that has a conservative bias to it, admittedly so, that they can latch onto. And I never thought that would be the reason. I thought for my success I was going to have to be a better broadcaster and sharper and faster and quicker, more informed and all that. I didn't bank on the fact that so much of the success would rely on the fact that I happened to be very fortunate in my timing. I think this country is far more conservative than even people think it is now. I travel the country every weekend making personal appearances and speeches. I see the people who make the country work, and I think that I happen to benefit today from having a lot in common with most Americans.
And that's a lot about what you write in your book, Brian, which is there was this kind of timing of, yeah, the FCC, you know, the fairness doctrine is lifted. You've got a country of people who feel very alienated, and you've got this very easy to access radio that people can plug into.
Yeah, you've got this. It's a unique moment. You have sort of dual threads here. You've got AM radio desperate for new programming because FM has taken all the advertising dollars and the listeners for music. And talk is starting to rise up even before Limbaugh, you know, throughout the 80s, as executives say, we've got to try something. We need something unique to differentiate us from FM. And at the same time, the culture wars are you know, peaking, and there have been many peaks, but you've got things like the Two Live Crew song "Me So Horny" that they're literally getting arrested on stage for, you know, violating laws about indecency, or Madonna's coming along. You get these movies and things where people feel like their values are completely under siege, and they feel like no one is voicing that. They feel like the news is coming from a left slant, and Limbaugh comes along, and the thing that a lot of people don't understand who don't listen to conservative talk radio is it is not all political all the time. What it is it's the dinner table in a conservative family. So whatever you're talking about that day that you would be talking about at the water cooler with your friends at work or at night at the dinner table, that's what they're talking about. But they're doing it from the perspective of conservatism. Conservative values infuse the conversation.
And for Rush, he believes what he says from your reading of him or listening to him.
Yeah, there's a certain element of tongue in cheek in terms of the hyperbole of things. You know, part of what they have to do is put a good show on, entertain people, engage them, keep them tuned in. And you don't do that by talking about nuance and compromise and a lot of stuff that is dry. So there's a certain incendiary element to it where he's a showman and he's putting on a show. But at his core, he grew up in a conservative household in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. You know, his father had welcomed Vice President Nixon in like 1952. So he was kind of locally connected politically. So Rush grew up in conservative politics. And at his core, he's conservative. That doesn't mean that he, like everybody else in talk radio, is not influenced by their audience and keeping their finger on the pulse of the audience, you know, staying where the audience is. I did an interview the day the book came out with a conservative host in Denver who very openly said, you know, I was with Ted Cruz and my audience brought me along on Donald Trump. So there's some of that, but they mostly believe what they're saying.
Well, and I think and we're going to take a break, but that radio, and I'm not saying, I think broadly speaking, but that radio listener-host relationship is very complicated, but it's also very intimate as well. Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Brian Rosenwald, he's got a new book called Talk Radio's America, How an Industry Took Over a Political Party That Took Over the United States. And he is a scholar in residence at the University of Pennsylvania, also co-editor-in-chief of Made by History, which is a section of the Washington Post. Well, we want to hear from you. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And we want to hear from you. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, and we are talking about AM commercial radio and the fact that for decades now, Rush Limbaugh has really dominated the airwaves, host of one of the most popular talk shows in the country, although I think Sean Hannity is giving him a bit of a run for his money. And our guest, Brian Rosenwald, has tracked really the rise and influence of talk radio on our politics, and he's got a new book called Talk Radio's America. some antecedents, I would say, to especially some of the more angry talk radio hosts. And you have to go back maybe to the 50s. Joe Pyne, Bob Grant. These were, again, talk radio hosts who were really vicious on the air, including vicious to their callers sometimes.
Yeah, Pyne is in L.A., and L.A. is sort of the birthplace of talk radio. The first all-talk station starts in 1960 in L.A. When they're trying to do something different. And Pyne is on the air in L.A., and he actually gets taken off. Grant gets his start, I believe, as they pull Pyne off the air the week of President Kennedy's assassination because they're worried about what he might say. And Joe Pyne's favorite, you know, thing to do was to say to callers, go gargle with razor blades. You know, he was as vicious as you get, you know. And Grant takes the act. He tones it down just that much. And you know, he bellows at people, get off my phone. And he goes from New York goes from L.A. to New York in the 70s. And he's basically on New York for, you know, thereafter, although he gets fired in 1996. Right after Disney buys the station. And the plane crash that kills Commerce Secretary Ron Brown.
Oh,
he jokes. He says, I'm a pessimist. He'll probably be the one survivor on that plane or something like that.
Wow.
You know, something pretty terrible. And his new corporate overlords at Disney say, you know, we want no part of this. But yet, and this shows how much consolidation has kind of impacted things. 2 weeks later, he's back on the family-owned WWOR, which is owned by something called Buckley Radio, which is a family-owned company, not a big conglomerate. And he's back on because he's top-rated in the market. And these guys, you know, the Grants and the Pines, they entertain because people want to see them abuse callers. That's their shtick. That's their thing. Limbaugh was always felt like, you know, I need to be polite to callers. I'm going to entertain through humor and parodies and snark and irony and things like that. But there are those people who have made it by being angry and reflecting the anger in the audience.
So when did talk radio, the more sort of modern iteration of talk radio, when did that then become political and really seeing the airwaves as a way to promote a very overt and a very conservative and sometimes conspiratorial point of view?
This is also Limbaugh. Just like he changes the norms about, oh, syndicated radio can work. You know, and people say, well, if this guy, you know, he becomes such a big phenomenon within 2 or 3 years of going national that there are rush rooms. I recently did an event with Jill Abramson, the former executive editor of The Times. And she said when she was at the Wall Street Journal in the early 90s, she remembered that you could listen to Limbaugh at the Palm, Steakhouse in D.C.
Oh, the fancy steakhouse.
Yeah, they made it a Rush room because that was such a big deal that people wanted to hear Rush. And as that's happening, radio executives are saying, well, I guess syndicated works. And they also say a lot of people, I think, in the business don't appreciate what a great entertainer Limbaugh is. And they think that the success is his conservatism. And so they start hiring other conservatives. And then there are two stations, KVI in Seattle and KSFO in San Francisco, that in the early 90s have wild success as the first branded all-conservative talk stations. And there had been earlier stations that were mostly conservative, but they weren't branded that way. And when that succeeds in first Seattle and then San Francisco, you get a lot of executives who say, my God, the key to success is conservatism. That's what people want. And they, you know, when you interview people in the business, they all say to you, you know, we're not the brightest bunch. We're a bunch of lemmings. The first question your boss is going to ask you when you're programming a format is, where is this working?
Yeah.
And if you
how big is your audience?
How big is your audience? But where is the format working? Because if you go with something that's working elsewhere, then there's not as much risk. Whereas if you try something new and it flops, then you're next on the chopping block. And so this becomes slowly the idiom in the business that you've got to be conservative to succeed. And they've got a lot of people who believe in what they call format purity, which is you wouldn't tune into the country station for Beethoven's Fifth. So why would you tune into a conservative talk station to hear a liberal? And so you get these things that kind of compound over a decade and make it all conservative.
Let me play another clip. And this is actually from Rush Limbaugh's radio show, again, back in 1990. But he's talking about how he sees himself.
If you listen to this show every day, you never need to read another newspaper again. Never read another magazine. I do it for you, and you get a bonus. I tell you what to think about this incredibly complicated and controversial issues. So here is our General Dinkins update theme.
There's a holdup in the Bronx. Brooklyn's broken out in fights.
There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights.
There's a scout troop short a child. Khrushchev's due and Idlewild.
General David Dinkins, where are you?
And, of course, about New York City Mayor David Dinkins. But basically, Rush is saying, I'll do your homework for you.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek there where
you can hear it.
You can hear, and his callers are always in on the joke, and a lot of people outside of that think that he actually does tell his listeners what to think. And I think that, you know, people ask me, is it top-down, is it bottom-up? And I think it's a little bit of both, which is to say, Rush is not telling his audience what to think. His audience is conservative. They are tuning in because he reflects their values. That doesn't mean that Rush can't focus their attention on an issue or a bill that they might not otherwise hear about that isn't getting a lot of attention or something like that. He can apply their values and say, folks, this might sound good, but this is why it's scary. Or he can take a really dense policy topic, something that would put you to sleep if I tried to explain it, and he could say, but it's really about this, and fit it into the theme that is sort of one of the themes. You know, it's kind of like a daytime soap opera. Some people watch Days of Their Lives, and other people tune into the Rush Limbaugh show, and there's good guys, there's bad guys, there's heroes, villains, and he fits the topic into that. But there is a kind of irony. You can hear it in mirth in his voice where he's saying, yes, I'm doing your thinking for you. I'm going to tell you what to think. He's mocking the people who think that that's what he does.
Let's talk about what happens in the 1990s under Bill Clinton, who becomes the president, obviously. And you talk about this relationship between Newt Gingrich, who was Speaker of the House at the time, briefly, and his relationship with Rush Limbaugh, and how that seems to, you know, bring another sort of level of politics, but also of kind of a bite to the politics.
Well, the irony of this is
obviously
that
we're talking about impeachment as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the irony of all of this is the first major leading party politician who gets the value of talk radio is Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not surprising because anyone who's ever heard him knows he can talk. And knows that he loves engaging average Joes. And he's doing it and is much more comfortable with it than George Herbert Walker Bush was, who, you know, more patrician, and as president of the United States, as this is all rising, he doesn't really need talk radio because he can call up ABC, CBS, NBC and say, I would like some airtime. And they say, okay, Mr. President. But Clinton comes along, Clinton gets this. And Clinton is actually great for Rush Limbaugh. And Limbaugh even admits this at points where he gives him something to rail against. You know, he does this bit every day where he starts it's like a Nightline takeoff from the Iranian hostage crisis where he says, you know, America held hostage day number whatever, and he calls it the raw deal. But then this new generation of Republicans rises, Newt Gingrich, Dick Armey, Tom DeLay, people like that who really get this. They listen to this stuff. They've been part of the far right groups in the House of Representatives that were marginalized and that use talk radio to give themselves a voice. And they become the leadership and they totally make talk radio the core of their communication strategy. The freshman orientation after the 1994 earthquake, which was the Republicans win the House for the first time in 40 years.
Right.
And people had said that this is Republicans can't win the House. It's a permanent Democratic majority. And at the orientation, they make Limbaugh an honorary member of the freshman class. He is posing for pictures. He is signing autographs. He's getting the rock star treatment. And Gingrich is talking to him regularly. They're friendly. Gingrich calls him the day after the election and says, thank you, Russ. Without you, this wouldn't happen.
You helped us overcome the elite media bias.
That's
or does
right.
that sound familiar?
That's what he says. And they are, you know, when the new Republican majority is sworn in January, they have the talk radio hosts from across the country descend on the Capitol because a lot of local hosts had helped these new freshman members get elected. And Limbaugh knows to keep his distance. He's on vacation that week. He's not at the Capitol. But these guys descend, and you have this relationship. There's one period that I chronicle where Gingrich calls him, I think it's like three times in 12 days. And the third time, he's just driving on I-95 to go see his daughter, and Limbaugh is railing about something, and he pulls over, calls staffers, says, you know, do something about this, and then calls Limbaugh to say, I'm taking care of this, Rush. Don't worry about it. And that's because it's a moment when conservatives on the right are angry at Gingrich, and he's trying to calm the waters, and he knows that where he has to go to do that is Rush Limbaugh.
Well, and it sounds like Trump's relationship with Fox News today, obviously TV.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Trump has that relationship with Limbaugh on some level. Limbaugh doesn't flaunt this stuff quite in the same way as the TV hosts do, and because it's a little bit harder to track You know, we watched Donald Trump watching Fox and tweeting it, so we know exactly what, you know, what he's watching when. I think it's a little bit harder to track with Limbaugh, but if you told me, you know, that they were texting all the time, it would not surprise me. You know, they play golf. We know that. We know that when Donald Trump wanted to reverse course and shut the government down last winter, the way he does that is by texting or calling Rush Limbaugh and saying, Rush, don't worry about it. If they don't give me my wall money, we're shutting it down. But yeah, it's that same relationship. It's that, you know, these guys are the most important figures in conservative politics, and the politicians know it.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Brian Rosenwald, our guest on Radio Times today. His new book is called Talk Radio's America, and it's subtitled How an Industry Took Over a Political Party That Took Over the United States. And again, you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us 1-888-477-9499. A comment from Keith. In my experience, people know that Limbaugh is telling them what to think, and they're okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, they share his values. Part of the deep bond between these hosts and their audience is a shared set of values. They grew up with the same values in, you know, middle America. So I don't think that, like, it's not like he's taking liberals and turning them around and they listen to Rush Limbaugh for a week and voila, they're conservative. You know, has it happened? Yes, but it's rare. It's people who share the values, and it's applying those values to what's in the news. It's saying, this is what's going on today, folks. And instead of giving you a purportedly objective but actually biased from the left, you know, take on it like you get on the nightly news, I'm going to tell it to you from your perspective, from your values.
Not my perspective, but from your perspective.
From your perspective, right. In the audience. I'm going to tell you what's going on, and I'm going to respect your values. I'm going to ask the questions you want asked, and I'm going to have, you know, your values inform the conversation.
Confirmation bias, right?
Yes.
We all seek out the people who tell us that what we believe is correct.
Yeah, and I even had some hosts, younger hosts, say to me, you know, before Rush Limbaugh goes national, I didn't know that the mainstream media was biased because I didn't know what conservative media sounded like. And Limbaugh comes along and they say, Eureka, look at this. This is a totally different product. And that's a big light bulb moment for a lot of people.
You were talking about Newt Gingrich. I'm going to jump ahead, but just where John Boehner, a Speaker of the House, is dealing with this revolution on his right flank, and he's trying to figure out how to navigate through all of this. And he tells Politico, I always liked Rush Limbaugh. When I went to Palm Beach, I would always meet with Rush. We'd go play golf. But you know, who was that right-wing guy, Mark Levin? He went really crazy, right? And he got a big audience. And he dragged Sean Hannity to the dark side. He dragged Rush to the dark side. And these guys, I used to talk to them all the time. Suddenly, they're beating the living blank out of me.
Yeah.
So here's, you know, Speaker of the House, Boehner, complaining about the power of talk radio.
Yeah, I mean, he understands that it shapes what his members are going to be willing to do. He understands that it shapes what his base is going to be willing to do and his ability to negotiate and accomplish things. And John Boehner, for all that he was a revolutionary early in his career, was also a pragmatic enough politician to understand he's speaker during divided government. And divided government, talk radio hates this, but divided government requires cutting deals. That's just the way the founders structured our Constitution and structured our government. You want to keep the lights on and keep things open, you're going to cut deals. You want to address any issues, you're going to cut deals. And Boehner is trying to do this. And, you know, famously, when his plan B breaks down, this is right after the 2012 election. Barack Obama's just been reelected. And we had that thing.
2012.
We had that fiscal cliff, which was this artificial disaster brewing of expiring tax cuts and draconian spending cuts that are going to go in automatically if they don't do something. They manufactured a crisis to force themselves to do something. And if ever there's a moment that you think that, okay, the Republicans are going to have to give up 2/3 in a deal, it's this. You know, Democrats gain seats in both houses of Congress. Obama's reelected. He's run on this. And Boehner makes a proposal that isn't all that favorable to what Obama wants. And then he makes another proposal. And he can't get the votes at his own caucus. And famously, right before Christmas, there's this House Republican meeting where Boehner recites the Serenity Prayer, sort of, you know, conveying his own powerlessness. And some of this is that, you know, Rush Limbaugh's called his press conference to even make a proposal, a seminar on how to surrender. These guys are the powerful figures, and by the time Boehner is speaker, there is a lot more of this. And the competition among these hosts, as that quote so nicely illustrates, has pushed even the most friendly ones to the right and towards warfare politics.
But also led to the kind of gridlock that I think we see now.
Absolutely, yes, because even if you want to cut a deal as a Republican today, we've had geographic polarization. The most important election for most Republicans is a primary right now, because they're in red states or red districts. And about 30% of the people show up in a presidential primary, which is it tells you how much lower it is for a congressional primary. And those people who show up are the most politically engaged, the most, you know, usually extreme kind of activist-y types. Well, those are the people listening to talk radio, watching cable news, reading Breitbart. And those are the people who are ready to get rid of you if you don't, you know, vote the line. I mean, the best example for people in this region, at least, would probably be Mike Castle, that the people remember from down in Delaware. He was a popular former governor. I think he was in the House for 9 years. He runs for Senate in 2010, and he is generally considered the favorite, overwhelming favorite, to take Vice President Biden's Senate seat. And he runs against this woman named Christine O'Donnell in a primary.
I'm not a witch, O'Donnell.
Yes, I'm not a witch. That's her most famous line. And this woman had Biden had killed her in 2008 by like 25 points. And she ends up beating Castle in the primary. Local talk radio down the south of Delaware, where it's more conservative, is always hammered Castle. The national guys kind of jump on board. And, you know, O'Donnell wins. And the next day, Rush actually breaks her website, like knocks it off the air because he says donate. And they raise $1 million. And she still loses.
Well, let me follow up on that because, yes, she beats Mike Castle. This is really inside politics here, but it affects Delaware. Beats Mike Castle, but then loses to Chris Coons, who is now the senator of Delaware. So what did Rush win out of that particular race?
See, Rush wins because Rush is where his audience is. His audience is frustrated. They're fed up. They feel like Republicans are making them all of these promises, and they never fight enough. And these hosts are always saying to him, you know, if these guys would just fight for you, we might actually get what they promise you. And they're frustrated. They started railing against rhinos in the years before that 2010
Republican
race.
In name only.
Republicans in name only. I call a chapter in the book Hunting Rhinos because they start going after these guys. And more they go from saying, hey, you need to vote for these guys like in the 90s. They say you have to vote for these guys because they're better than the alternative. To saying, you know what? Having these guys is worthless. They're no different than the Democrats. They're just polluting our team basically and blurring the lines. We need to get rid of them. And if that means we lose a couple of seats, then so be it. They're not serving us well in any way, shape, or form. And so they get the benefit of a Republican Party that more reflects their politics and their audience's politics. And they get rid of guys who they think are just making things harder to get things done.
That is Brian Rosenwald, our guest on Radio Times today. Again, he's got a new book. It's called Talk Radio's America. We got a bunch of comments here. As Rush's demographics ages, how do you see carrying the torch of Limbaugh's legacy for the next generation? We'll pick up on that. A tweet from ATB Judge. As you play these clips of Limbaugh, I can hear Trump in his entertainment mode. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Brian Rosenwald about the rise and influence of AM talk radio. We're spending a lot of time talking about Rush Limbaugh, in part because he was there largely from the beginning and also has been so successful in holding on to his audience and also influencing our political system. And again, you can join us 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. Let me pick up on the question right before the break having to do with Rush Limbaugh's audience that, as I understand it, trends older, whiter, maler than the rest of America.
Yeah, the demographics for both Rush Limbaugh and Fox News are, you know, the last time I looked, they were like high 60s. And obviously that's outside of the main advertiser demographic of 25 to 55, and it's only getting older. But people who ask me, you know, is this the end? Is it going to end? I think the thing that's at risk is the AM radio stick. I'm not sure that people are going to listen to 22 minutes of commercials an hour going forward because they're so used to podcasts and time shifting and DVRs and things like that. But you look at people like Ben Shapiro, who is a young conservative who is thriving and who, when I interviewed him, said that his demographics are young. And I think the reason why I mentioned those stations in Seattle and San Francisco that are among the first all-conservative stations that succeed. And they succeed because in a big city market, you only need like 3 to 5% of the audience to have a really successful...
A big audience.
Right. To have potential. A big audience and be really successful. Well, you know, if you look at polling on millennials, 65 to 70% lean left. But that means that the other 30% can't really say what they're thinking in a lot of cases, especially in like cancel culture and, you know, the culture that we have now. They can't say what they're thinking without worrying about friends or relatives or bosses saying, you bigot, how dare you think that way or feel that way? So I imagine they get a thrill tuning into someone like Ben Shapiro, who is saying things, saying them in incendiary terms, and giving them a little bit of a clubhouse of their own. You know, talk radio is essentially the neighborhood bar in a conservative neighborhood. It fills in as we have a more atomized society. And I think someone like Shapiro can serve that function for young conservatives. They just might be getting it through an app or a website, not the AM radio stick.
Here's a question for Nancy. How does Alex Jones fit into this story?
Alex Jones was not really a big part of this story for most of my research period. Because Alex Jones is obviously, for those who are unfamiliar, he's a conspiracy theorist.
Absolutely.
Of the worst order. He calls 9/11 a false flag. He says the Sandy Hook shootings are a false flag. And he's also, as the comedian John Oliver has exposed, somewhat of a grifter. You know, he's got all these products.
He's selling all these sort
right.
of everything apocalyptic
from,
products.
Yeah, it's like everything from like fragrances to survival kits in his InfoWars website. And Alex Jones, you know, no Republican would go on with him because that would be the end of your political career until Donald Trump comes along. And then Donald Trump goes on with him during the Republican primaries. He apparently talks to him. And all of a sudden, Donald Trump has brought him a little bit more into the mainstream. And that goes for other folks as well. There's a guy named Bill Mitchell who's my favorite story of this. And Bill Mitchell is this guy who's got this perfectly coiffed set of silver hair. And he looks like he should be a big-time host. And a lot of people just assumed that he was, when in reality he's like an executive recruiter who has his own internet radio show. But he becomes a Twitter phenomenon in 2016, partly because he's getting mocked every day by pollsters because he says, you know, that what matters are lawn signs and rallies, not polls. And he turns out, you know, he has a lot of people eating crow after the election, but he becomes a big deal because Donald Trump is tweeting him or retweeting him. And Donald Trump brings these voices in that would otherwise have been considered gadflies, even in conservative media, and mainstreams them and brings the whole thing more to the right and even more towards conspiracy than it ever was.
Is that because of the way President Trump talks, the way he speaks, even using conspiracy theories, even saying things that are not true, that there's something about that that has the kind of ring of talk radio?
That's one element of it. And there's another element of it, which is that, you know, for those who have seen the movie Anchorman, the joke is that Ron Burgundy will read anything on the teleprompter. Well, the joke with Donald Trump is if you say something nice about him, he will retweet it or thank you for it. It doesn't matter who you are. Whereas, you know, more sort of formal, structured, traditional politicians, they're doing background. You know, before they're going to praise Alex Jones or retweet Alex Jones, they want to know who that is. They want to make sure there's going to be no blowback. Donald Trump doesn't worry about such niceties. You know, he's always getting in trouble because he retweeted this person who did this or that or the other thing because he doesn't care. The number one, there's only one metric. Are you on my team? Are you praising me? Are you on my side? If you are, then you're worthy of my attention and my affection.
There's one moment, and this goes back to 2015, and I've said this before on the radio, but it still sticks in my craw, when then-candidate Donald Trump goes after John McCain, Senator John McCain, obviously a POW and a veteran himself, goes after him, insults him, denigrates him, and yet that moment does not cut him off from that audience that seems to be so connected to talk radio, and I don't understand why.
Well, you know, there's all of these moments that summer and into the next summer where Donald Trump does or says something that we, you know, all confidently said, that's it. He's done. It's over. You know, you can't say that. That would have ended anybody else's career for decades. And one of the few people who gets that it isn't going to end his career, the McCain comments, is Rush. Rush says, oh, wait a second. Every time this happens, the liberal media gets up there. He calls it the drive-by media, implying, you know, that that truth is what's being shot. And he says that, you know, wait a second. They say to you, that's it. This is such a heinous act. The guy not only has to resign, he's going to go away. His career's over, all these things. And do you want that? You know, the people who should be making this choice are you, my audience. You, the conservative base voter who's going to vote in this primary. And I don't know what you're going to decide, but mm-hmm. it should be your choice. And what happens here is people don't understand that, yes, Donald Trump says things that no other politician got away with saying. And he has heresies. If you look at his background, this guy was not exactly Mr. Conservative for a large portion of his life.
In fact, he was Mr. Liberal in a lot of ways. Yeah. With some digressions.
Right. I mean, but gun control, abortion, all this stuff. And people say, well, how is he getting these people? And the answer is he's got the style of talk radio. He sounds like a host. The audience is yearning for a fighter. They want someone who's going to sound like they're champions in the air, who's going to actually stand up to what they perceive as Democrats who are willing to do or say anything to win and that fight much harder. And we could debate that point, but that's how they feel.
And does that explain when we see the rallies, the way the audience just adores what they hear, cheering his every word?
Yeah, the rallies are basically like a live talk radio show, and he's the host. He's the MC. They are so thrilled to finally have someone who's going to fight for them. A Republican who, when you say, Donald, you can't say that, says, oh, not only am I going to say it, but I'm going to punch you right back in the nose. And they get a thrill from that because that's what hosts have done. And he captures that ethos. And a lot of these people say, you know, they might cringe when he says something like the McCain comments or he talks about Gold Star families the way he does. But at the end of the day, they finally have a fighter. They're not going to cut him, you know, loose because of that.
Well, let me play a clip from Rush Limbaugh, actually from last Thursday, addressing their reaction to Trump's tweet calling so-called Never Trump Republicans scum.
So many Never Trumpers. Oh, so many Republicans. So many in the drive-by media. So distressed. So upset because Donald Trump happened to say that Republican Never Trumpers are a bunch of scum. Oh my God! Oh my God! The Republic may not serve. The president called some Republican scum. Stop and think what Trump has been called. Stop and think of what you've been called. You're called a racist, sexist, bigot, homophobe every day for 30 plus years. You're called all kinds of horrible, rotten stuff every day by the media. And so are the people you elect, and so are the people you represent. Donald Trump has been called a traitor, he's been called a pig, he's been called an ogre. And he calls people who betray him scum. Oh my God, oh God.
That's exactly what you were saying.
Yeah. I mean, these people want someone who's going to fight for them. And this is what Rush does on the air every day, and others like him. And it's what Donald Trump does. And that ethos, tapping into that ethos, is part of what creates this powerful bond that he has with his fans, where they're willing to overlook things that they might not otherwise tolerate. And not just what he says, but also, you know, this guy's been divorced. He's not a Christian conservative in terms of living it. And they're willing to tolerate all of that.
Let me get David, who's calling us from Fairmount, to join our conversation. And David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you. Yes, about 10 to 15 years ago, when Michael Steele was chairman of the Republican National Committee, he finally broke ranks with his Republican colleagues to criticize specifically Rush Limbaugh and the toxic effect of conservative talk radio. Rush Limbaugh then, wielding the power of his mic, spent the next day eviscerating Steele, who then did a complete 180, apologizing to Limbaugh and prostrating himself before the conservative talk radio altar. And I will never forget that as being sort of a seminal moment in the relationship between talk radio and politics. Does your author, does he document that or does he recall that occurrence?
David, he is nodding his head vigorously as you're describing that. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, David.
Thanks, David, for the call.
There's this moment, and there's also a Republican congressman by the name of Phil Gingrey who dares to criticize talk radio in the same period within a couple of months there, and they both quickly have to do about faces. Gingrey goes on with like three different hosts to apologize and say, I'm sorry. He calls Rush, and he's very, very apologetic. I'm sorry, I can't, I didn't mean any of this, because they understand that by that point, this is 2009, the power in conservative politics is with these hosts. These hosts might not, you know, be elected. They might not be appointed like the RNC chairman like Steele was, but they have more power because the base of the Republican Party, the base of conservatism, is their listeners. And they have this powerful bond that they formed over 30 years with these listeners, where if Rush says, you know, Michael Steele is the problem here, Michael Steele has a big problem. And so that forces the about face.
And he, I'm not sure all the details of how he was no longer the head of the RNC, but he is no longer head of the RNC.
Right. And he's sort of one of those heretics that Trump called scum last week, I think.
A comment from David. I don't see Rush Limbaugh as a conservative commentator. I see him as a provocateur, not someone who espouses conservative values. Do you agree with that?
He's both. I would say he's both. He is a provocateur. His number one goal every day is, how can I put on the best show? You heard it in that last clip. He's doing voices. There's drama. It's a show. But I think he is a conservative, and I think he is a commentator now, in that what he says about politics matters to his audience. It matters to Republican opinion. It matters to Republican congressmen and even the Trump White House in terms of what they're doing. So I think he's both.
An email from Chris. I remember my parents used to listen to Rush Limbaugh in their office when I was a kid. Even at 8 years old, I could tell it was negative, and it reminded me of bullies. I can thank Rush for making me the progressive I am today. A tweet from T.A. Campbell says, is there a liberal version of Trump? And there was Air America for a while, which had Rachel Maddow and Al Franken and some others, I think well-known names in the more conservative liberal part of talk radio, but it didn't last.
I mean, I could spend an hour just explaining what happened to Air America. There were a lot of problems inherent to Air America, but there have been successful liberal radio hosts, but not to the level of Rush, people like Tom Hartman. Now, I do think there is a moment happening now that you've got new technology has lowered the threshold of getting in on this media game. Anybody can plug a microphone into their computer, and if Absolutely. They're good, start a podcast and maybe get a following. And you have things like Pod Save America that in the Trump era have taken off because liberals and even people further left feel marginalized in the way those conservatives did in 1988. There is a market for this. And so I think you're seeing some of those voices starting to develop. You have obviously the Rachel Maddows of the world and MSNBC. It's just not AM talk radio. They've got their own things. And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that one area that has become very liberal is late night television comedy. You might not have a liberal Rush Limbaugh, but you do have Stephen Colbert. You do have Trevor Noah and people like that who are entertainers who are bringing a clearly liberal perspective.
And the struggle of trying to find that conservative comedian who kind of fits that ilk. Well, I would be remiss if we didn't play a clip from The Simpsons, and we always look to do that, thanks to John Ahrens. Here's a parody of Rush Limbaugh, a guy named Birch Barlow.
But now Springfield's favorite conservative and author of the well-selling book Only Turkeys Have Left Wings. Ladies and gentlemen, Birch Barlow.
Good morning, fellow freedom likers. Birch Barlow, the fourth branch of government, the 51st state. You know, there are three things we're never going to get rid of here in Springfield. One, the bats in the public library. Two, Mrs. McFeely's compost heap. And three, our six-term mayor, the illiterate, tax-cheating, wife-swapping, pot-smoking spendocrat, Diamond Joe Quimby. Now, why are we doomed to this Quimby quagmire, you ask, oh, reasonable listener? Because this town is under the stranglehold of a few tie-dyed tree huggers who would rather play hacky sack than lock up the homeless.
Oh, the Simpsons, may they live forever. Good stuff.
You can caricature it because it's so, you know, over the top.
We're almost out of time here, so an unfair question to put at the end of the show. But do you see, though, the Republican Party sort of being caught by the conservative talk show world that you have been describing?
Yeah, they courted the stuff. They helped make it big, and it provided them with a lot of benefits for a long time. But right now, it is keeping them, it's pushing them further and further right and pushing them further and further towards seeing politics as warfare. And quite frankly, it doesn't seem like going forward, that's the pathway to a viable majority. If you look at the demographics, if you look at where the polling is on issues, it's a way to have what Donald Trump has, which is a very passionate base of like a third or 40% of Americans. But that's not a majority. And they have a real problem coming down the pike, and they're kind of trapped because if they go any way towards the center, these Hulse are going to kill them for it. And they have a problem. You know, Hannity's threatening yesterday saying, I better see no Republicans vote for the impeachment inquiry in the House on Thursday. You have these threats and they have to take them seriously. But by the same token, the majority of Americans are alienated by what these Hulse want.
We're going to have to leave it there. Brian Rosenwald, thanks for coming in. Thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. And again, his book is called Talk Radio's America. He's co-editor-in-chief of Made by History, which is a section of the Washington Post. He's also a scholar in residence at the University of Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.